There's a high fly ball.
From KMOX Sports.
That's hit deep to left field, and it's a gutter.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado. There's a moment for you.
Welcome to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's driving jam time.
And the Billikens win this one.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
Comeback pattern caught. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Now, Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Hey, great to be with you. Only an hour tonight, but we'll get back at the normal 2 hours tomorrow. Could hear from Travis Ford and Bob Ramsey with the Billikens Coaches Show that just wrapped up at the top of the hour. And unfortunately, a game on Wednesday has been canceled, which does two things. One, pushes that game off to a later date, but also means we'll have a two-hour Sports Open Line that night. There's not going to be a gap. We're going to take care of that. So I hate seeing all the games postponed. I know that, you know, I understand why. It's all good. It all makes sense. I understand it. But it's still, you know, less than ideal, obviously, and everybody would like to get back to more normal. Not quite there, but heading in the right direction. So obviously, we'll have more Billikens basketball for you down the road. The problem, by the way, in this game was on the LaSalle side. They have too many people in COVID protocol, so cannot play on Wednesday. Now, we're going to do a lot of things tonight. I'm going to try to squeeze a lot into 1 hour, and whatever I can't get to tonight, we'll get to over the course of the rest of the week, starting tomorrow night. But we're going to get a little college football playoff talk in. I want to get into that in the next segment. A lot of different angles here. Number one, just how clearly it was proven on New Year's Eve that Alabama and Georgia are vastly superior to every other team in the country. I mean, it's not close. I mean, here you have, you know, the Big Ten champ who bullied Ohio State and ran the ball down their throat. They couldn't even get out of their own way against Georgia. That's how good Georgia is. And we all know what Alabama did to Georgia. We know what Alabama did to Cincinnati, too. So we'll get into the national championship matchup, whether or not playoff expansion could help, because these semifinal games historically have been brutal. Lots of blowouts, which basically, guys, means that nobody's been as good as the SEC. And people can complain all they want. Oh, the SEC's overhyped. No, they're not. No, they're not. What have they won? 14 of the last 23 or 24 championships? I mean, come on, man. Toss in Clemson as a Southeastern team, and you're looking at, you know, two-thirds of the most recent championships. And more than that, when you look at the last 10 or 15 years rather than, you know, the last 24, 25 years. So it is what it is. But I asked this question on Twitter. I'm going to pass along the results a little bit later on. But I asked the question on Twitter over the weekend. Do you want the two best teams or do you just want different teams? What do you want in a national championship? I think the answers that I got will surprise you given the whining that we hear.
I'm not going to watch because I already saw this game.
Yeah, nobody likes rematches ever. There's nothing fun about the two best teams in the country meeting with one of them having revenge on the line. Who wants to see all the best players in the country go head-to-head? So college football coming up in the next segment. We'll talk about Antonio Brown a little bit later on in the NFL and how the NFL and NFL culture has done him no favors. He has his share of all of this, and we're going to talk about all of this from the mental health side of it to the enabling side of it to how we handle the responsibility of someone whose actions are those of Antonio Brown. In case you missed it over the weekend, Bruce Arians said they told Antonio Brown they wanted him to go in the game. He said no. They said leave, and he left. And in leaving, took off all of his gear, his shoulder pads, his jersey, everything, went out shirtless, walked out. That was it. And the team said they're done with him afterwards, although they haven't released him yet. And I'm sure that's for competitive reasons. They don't want him to get picked up by somebody else. I'm sure that's what it is. Not that anybody else necessarily would, but they could. So we'll get that later, and we got some baseball for later on, too. Some of it is how nothing has happened, but I have a message for the commissioner who won't hear it because why would he? But it's not just for him either, by the way. It's for the owners and for the Players Association, too. We'll get to that later on. All right, but I want to start with the Blues. I have grown to love this team more as the season has gone along, and I like them to begin with. I mean, before the year, I said I thought they were one of the three or four best teams in the Western Conference, and they are. And they are, despite all of the goofiness and nonsense that they've had to deal with. with regular injuries combined with COVID absences and playing short. And it's been goofy. I mean, you all have seen it, you know. But I like this team, and they're finally getting to be back to whole. Braden Schenn is back from IR now, so they've got the people back that they planned on having for the rest of the season. And I'll be curious to see where they finish. But I was just, filling in last week for Charlie Brennan. I did that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And on Friday, I was doing predictions for 2022. And I predicted that the Blues are going to make a deep playoff run this year. Now, I didn't say they're going to win the Cup. I'm not sure about that. But I'd be shocked if they don't get at least to, like, Game 7 in the second round. But I think more like conference finals is what I'm thinking. Like, as a starting point for a conversation. I love the way the team is playing. They aren't perfect. They still got some things they need to work out, but they're getting better as they go. They're finally getting healthy. And I just love how they handled the whole thing with the Winter Classic. I love how they handled the whole thing. In case you guys missed it, which you didn't. I don't know why I even said that. Nobody listening to Sports Open Line missed it. But it was minus 7 degrees in Minnesota at game time. The wind chill was negative 21. And those guys got on the bus to go to Target Field in board shorts and Hawaiian shirts and sandals and flip-flops and the whole deal. They dressed for a day at the beach. And then they backed it up. I love the humor. I love this. I like the idea that, hey, it doesn't matter. It's cold. So what? We're professional athletes. It's the same for both teams. And we're going to do this as a show of unity. We're going to do this because it's funny, right? I don't think it's one of these big symbolic, we're tougher than you kind of things. I think it's just one of those, like, all right, we're hockey players, man. We grew up skating outside. We grew up in the cold. We play in the cold. We're on ice every day. It's okay. And then once you get moving around, we've all done that. Once you get moving around, you actually get a little sweat going in there. I'm trying to remember this. I was talking to my wife about this while that was happening during right before the Winter Classic. But this is going back to the mid-90s somewhere, not long after college. My wife's cousin was living in the Twin Cities. And they invited all the cousins up, and there's about six of us, or eight of us, I think. And we're all going to hang out there for New Year's Eve weekend. You know, we're going to have a New Year's Eve party together, we're going to have some food, we're going to hang out for 3 or 4 days. And the guys, we gathered up, a couple of friends and everything, and we were out on the frozen tundra in the Twin Cities playing tackle football in negative 10-degree weather. And we first got out there, and we're like, and we're idiots. We're all in our 20s, so you're an idiot, right? I mean, I know I was an idiot. I'm like, we're up there, and they're like, get out there first. You're like, what are we doing? This is so stupid. It's freezing and I can't feel my face. And like 10 minutes later, you're fine. You're running around. You're getting snow in your face. I don't care. Wipe it off. So yeah, you do get used to it when you're moving around like that, especially when you're in the environment that they're in. But I just thought I love the personality that move showed. I like that they had a sense of humor about it. And then I like the fact that they backed it up, went out and kicked ass. And won 6-4. I really enjoy this team. And I go back to mid-November when I didn't like this team very much. And it was after the Arizona loss. There was not a lot of energy there. They had lost. That was the fourth loss in a row. They had lost, I think it was something like 6 out of 8 or 6 out of 9. Things weren't good. After that Arizona loss, they were 8-5-2 after a 5-0 start. But they've completely turned it back around. I really like this team. I'm not saying there won't be further bumps in the road. There probably will be. It's a long season still, man. We still have January, February, March, and April to get through. We're nowhere near the playoffs. But I like the personality of the team. I like the trend that the team is going on. The fact that the new guys are delivering, and not only delivering, but maybe even over-delivering, that Vlad Tarasenko is Vlad Tarasenko, that he's a point-per-game player right now and is on a pace for a 30-goal season. And he's not the only one that's on a pace for a really strong season. I like the depth that they've shown dealing with all of this other stuff. I mean, I think we now know that if a goalie gets hurt, you got another one in Charlie Lindgren who can help you. I like the team a lot, and I really enjoyed the performance up in Minneapolis, and I'm in. And I've even made the promise already that I will do the Blue Mohawk again if they win the Stanley Cup. I'm getting in on it early this year. But I like this team a lot, and I think a deep run in the playoffs is coming, assuming reasonably good health at that time when you get to the postseason. All right, college football's up next. Georgia and Alabama beat the living hell out of Michigan and Cincinnati, respectively. What does that mean? Is it a bad thing for college football? There are a lot of levels to this conversation. I'm going to try to get to them all coming up next on KMOX.
Your home of the Cardinals, Billikens,
yes.
And Chiefs.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, let's move into some college football. The national championship game is going to be played 1 week from tonight, and that'll be played between two teams from the same conference. I know you're shocked. It's the SEC. Georgia and Alabama will have a rematch of the SEC championship game coming up Monday night, and of course, when you hear that news, you got to cue all the whiners. I'm not watching. I've seen this game before. No, you didn't see this game before. This game is for the championship. That game was just to decide who would win the SEC. And when did rematches become not fun? Some of the best sporting events that I can remember were rematches. It's where you get a grudge. It's where you get a rivalry. And by the way, don't you want to see the best teams? Like, when you're talking about a championship game, what's more important to you? Having good stories or having the two best teams play for the championship? Because to me, it's having the best teams. I want to see the two most talented teams go head-to-head for a national championship or for the Super Bowl or whatever. And by the way, I put this out there. This is not a scientific poll by any means, but on New Year's Day, I tweeted out a question. If you don't have a specific rooting interest in your team involved, which do you prefer for a championship game as a viewer? The two best teams or basically anything but a rematch, which is the story angle, right? 77% of the people that voted said the two best teams. So why do we hear the whining so much? You're going to get what you want. Next Monday night, it's the two best teams in college football. And by the way, I would say it this way. Indisputably the two best teams in college football. Indisputably. Because Michigan was supposed to be really damn good, weren't they? And they beat Ohio State. They had a great regular season. They won the Big Ten. The Big Ten was, I think, very clearly the second best conference in the country this year. ACC was awful. The Big 12 was weak. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't good. Pac-12 was soft. So the best team from the second best conference in the country was Michigan. And they had no chance. They got bullied by Georgia. Absolutely destroyed. At the line of scrimmage, number one, which leads to everything else. And by the way, I feel like an idiot because I thought Michigan was going to give them a game. I picked Georgia to win, but I thought Michigan was going to cover the 7.5. I'm like, they're similar teams, right? They're physical. They played good defense. They run the football. I figured, it's going to be. Nope. Nope. Turns out having a lot more 5-star players actually matters. And I think I saw the number, and I don't remember who tweeted it, and I apologize for that. But I think that it's looking at the last 4 recruiting cycles. Michigan had something like 7 or 8 5-star players. Georgia had 40. That kind of matters. And really matters on the offensive and defensive line. And that's where the game's different. And by the way, that's where Alabama and Georgia match up. And that's why that's going to be a good game. I don't know if it's going to be competitive. You never know, right? I mean, Alabama smoked Georgia in the SEC championship game. So it could go bad. But there is zero doubt about who the two best teams in college football were up until this point. It's Georgia and Alabama. It's not Notre Dame. It's not Cincinnati. It's not Michigan. And it certainly isn't anybody else. These were the best two teams. That's what we got. Now, the complaining is turning into I think it's almost like a preemptive complaint about the expanding playoffs. Well, you think expanding the playoffs is going to fix this? No, you know what? It's probably not. But at least then the rest of the country has a reason to pay attention. Because for the last, seems like the last 100 years, but really for the last 15 years, it's been all SEC and Clemson. And that's not good for college football. It is not good for one region of the country to have everything. And for an entire, I mean, look, the entire West Coast is shut out of the playoffs every year. The Pac-12 doesn't get any love in this. The Big 12 barely does. I mean, at some point, you need, you're the fans of all these other conferences need to think there's at least a chance. And you have no chance if you can't even get into the playoff. Half of the playoff spots this year were occupied by the SEC. And again, rightfully so. Georgia and Bama are clearly the two best teams. But you still have to sell tickets. You still have to keep people interested. And people are not going to be interested for much longer if they don't think the teams that they root for have a chance. And you don't have a chance when you can't get in. Now, maybe you can't beat these teams anyway. But we also have to keep in mind, this dynamic isn't going to last forever. Nick Saban is not going to be at Alabama forever. They will eventually come back to earth when Nick Saban is no longer coaching them. Very unlikely that the successor to Nick Saban is just going to keep this rolling. And you can see the other SEC schools kind of come and go, right? LSU comes and goes, and Georgia comes and goes. Other schools are going to have their chance, but they're not going to have their chance if you can't get in. So let's not complain about making college football more exciting for more parts of the country. If you're a Pac-12 fan right now, you can look at it next year and say, yep, we're not going to have a team in the playoffs. We're not. Probably going to be, well, it's going to be Alabama. They're going to be there. Probably another SEC team. And then we'll see. Does Clemson bounce back? Ohio State's probably going to be amazing next year because Stroud's only going to get better. And Travion Henderson, the running back, is only a freshman. And the receiver, Smith and Jigba, that guy is going to be a top five pick in the NFL. He is ridiculous. Like, Ohio State's going to be amazing next year. And Michigan should still be pretty damn good, too. But the point is, you got a lot of schools, a lot of regions out there where they're not going to be represented, and you need to have them involved. You need to have them understand that they have a chance. And you don't have a chance unless you're in it. Now, this brings me to a last thing, the final thing, and this is a quick thought. Because a lot of my friends are Michigan fans. I grew up not too far from Ann Arbor. A lot of my high school friends and people I grew up with either went to Michigan or still root for Michigan, regardless of where they ended up going to college. Teams like that and Ohio State, and if you guys want to see the numbers, Bernie Miklas did a great job on putting out these numbers, Scoops with Danny Mac today. But if you want to see the numbers, essentially it's simple. If you want to have any chance at winning a national championship, you have to be able to beat Alabama and Georgia and teams like that. You have to be able to beat teams that are physically superior to you. You're not going to out-recruit them. So how do you do that? Well, let's look at the teams and what has given Alabama trouble at times in the past. It's always the fast-paced offense that plays with tempo with a mobile quarterback. And what I'm telling you is this. All of the top programs out there that think that they're top programs need to come into each year right now with one thought in mind. And that is, how can we beat Alabama? You need to build your program around that thought. How can we beat Alabama? Because if you could beat them, you can beat anybody in your conference. And you can beat anybody else in the SEC. And the question comes down to, how do I beat a team that is more talented than my team and has the best coaching staff in the country? I mean, you look at Bama. They got analysts that are, you know, recently fired head coaches and coordinators in the NFL, for example. Like, they're always going to have the best and the deepest coaching staff. So how do you beat all that? Well, you can't play like them. And I want to give credit to my buddy Matthew Leach. Formerly covered the Cardinals for MLB.com. He still works for MLB.com, but no longer with the Cardinals, covering the Cardinals, obviously. But he made a simple observation in a tweet over the weekend. Like, look, you're not going to beat Georgia and Alabama by being what they are. You're not going to out-bully them. You can't. You need to beat them with creativity, tempo, speed, and you're going to have the quarterback. You're going to have that. So build an offense that can score on these two teams. By the way, it's what Clemson did. It's why they've had a chance to compete with them over recent years. It's a creative, high-flying offense, and they've gotten guys like Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence that can run that offense and put up points even against the best. All right, coming up next, let's go to the NFL for a bit. But it's really going to be about Antonio Brown. And this line that we have to walk, I guess, or maybe this bridge that we have to cross. I think maybe that's better. Or maybe these two sides of the river that we need to bridge the gap on. Because we have to take care of somebody who's clearly not right. I don't know. I'm not going to diagnose Antonio Brown, but certainly there's something going on and has been for a long time when you look at his track record. Talking about mental health. But we also have to have accountability for actions too. Right? We can't just be like, well, let's just show some empathy. Sure, you need to do that. But at some point, doesn't the person need to get their stuff together? I'm going to talk about trying to bridge that gap next up on KMOX.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, it's Monday night on Sports Open Line, and covering as much ground as we can, and whatever we can't get into tonight, we'll have time for tomorrow. I want to talk a bit about Antonio Brown, because, look, it's not a fun subject. I don't look at this and be like, oh, yay, I get to talk about a guy losing it on the sidelines who's had all kinds of problems before, and we get to talk about serious issues, which we are here with mental health. And how do we handle that? And how do you simultaneously show that, you know, you care about someone that needs help, you care to see that they get that help, and at the same time understand that you're going to have to still face the consequences for your actions? I mean this is It's an important topic, and I think, unfortunately, we have too many on one side of this that would rather make jokes about Antonio Brown, which I understand, by the way, because what he did over the weekend was clownish. The show that he put on yesterday when he was walking off the field, taking off his jersey and shoulder pads, taking off his undershirt, going shirtless, dancing in the end zone and waving at the crowd and all that, it was childish. And look, when you look at his history, it's very clear that he has problems. I don't know what they are. I'm not going to try to diagnose Antonio Brown on the radio and say he's got this thing or that thing or another. I don't know. But I know this just from observing him and watching the self-destructive behavior now for a number of years. He needs help. But at the same time, helping him isn't just saying, oh, man, I feel so bad for him. I hope he gets help. It's also finding a way to get him to face what's happening. You still have to be in some way accountable for your actions. It is not wrong to criticize Antonio Brown for what he did. You do have to acknowledge perhaps some of what's behind it. But this is a guy that has had problem after problem after problem for a number of years, right? And we know how it went in Pittsburgh. He quit on the team in the final regular season game when they had a playoff spot on the line. He quit on his team. Now, were there things going on in that locker room that we don't know about? Rivalries, arguments, personality clashes? I don't know. Probably. But you don't think that happens all the time? When he went to the Raiders, remember the whole helmet controversy? The NFL changed their helmets. They're trying to make things more safe to the degree that they can. And Antonio Brown was insistent that he's not changing helmets. He wants to wear his old helmet, and he tried to paint it to make it look like it's a new helmet and all that. And, of course, the Raiders thing ended poorly. New England took a shot at him because Tom Brady asked. 3 days later, he was hit with a lawsuit with accusations of sexual harassment. That was by one woman who was, I believe, his former strength coach or trainer. And then the second woman came forward with accusations on that. And then in January of 2020, Antonio Brown went to jail. He was accused of stealing a moving truck and assaulting the driver. Now, it's not like he was sentenced to a long... He wasn't sentenced to like 5 years in prison, but he was arrested. And by the way, he pled no contest on that and was given probation. And of course, now you have the latest thing in Tampa Bay. There's clearly something up with him. This is one of the most talented wide receivers in the NFL, which is why everybody keeps giving him chances. The problem with everybody continuing to give him chances, though, is that it means he has not really paid a price for the things that have gone wrong and therefore apparently is not seeking to get better. I mean, you listen to Tom Brady's comments after the game, and like Tom made a good point, right? I mean, you know, what you need is a little empathy. You know, there's I just saw a report today, and I'm sorry again, I'm forgetting who put it out there, but that in the days leading up to this, there were some people inside the Buccaneers that were a little worried about how his state of mind was, that maybe this was building to something. So whatever is going on, we have to find a way to bridge the gap between these two things. And the two things are simply saying, God, I hope he gets help. I feel bad for him. He clearly has problems, which is a legitimate, fair, and seemingly accurate kind of outlook on this. You got that side of it, and then you got the other side, which is essentially this dude's got to get over himself. If he needs help, he needs to go get it. And meanwhile, people are going to make jokes and create memes and all that. Look, you do need to show sympathy here. We do need to account for the very strong likelihood that there are some serious mental health issues behind the behaviors that we've seen from Antonio Brown. But here's the thing. There are millions of people out there that are battling mental health issues, and they're not doing the things that Antonio Brown has done. We can do these two things at once. We can hope that this person gets help. We can want that for them. We can have that human empathy and say we don't want them to be in a bad place. You don't want them to be hurting. Every diagnosis is different, but we don't want that pain. We feel for the person. But at the same time, there still has to be accountability for your actions. I mean, let's think about this. And I looked this up because I wanted to make a serious point here. But people that have mental illness are twice as likely to have a substance abuse problem as the general population. So let's say you have something, you're dealing with depression and anxiety. Maybe you're bipolar, whatever. These are difficult, scary things. Because you are dealing with those things, if you self-medicate with alcohol and you go out and drink and drive and you kill somebody in a DUI accident, you're not going to get a free pass because you have mental health issues. You're going to jail. So we already have this concept in play in the real world. You're held accountable for your actions, but we do still want to take care of you and help you get better. Now, Antonio Brown is not at that level. He, in this case, especially over the weekend, what he did was at worst embarrassing for him, right? It's not something that damages the team or the league or the sport. You can say he walked out on his teammates. Fine. That's an issue for him and his teammates. That's not for us to worry about. But no matter what he's done over the course of the years, there hasn't really been any repercussions, have there? He gets a new team every time he goes through a problem one place. Somebody else is going to take that chance, and they're going to pay him good money to do it. Once he got clear of the legal problems, somebody brought him in. At some point, if there are no consequences for the actions, there's no incentive to change. So, yeah, I feel bad for Antonio Brown because there's clearly something going on there that is, at least at the moment, beyond his control. He can't just say, okay, I'm going to stop doing this. He needs help. But that does not come with a free pass for the things that you do. And again, we can argue whether or not the entire legal system is correct in how it handles this. But I think we all tend to agree, right? No matter what led you to the time that you got drunk and drove a car and hurt someone else, no matter what led to that, whether it was a fight with somebody or you're an alcoholic or you're self-medicating because of a mental health issue, regardless of any of that, if you drink and drive and you get into an accident and kill somebody, you will be held responsible for that. Doesn't mean you don't need treatment. It doesn't mean we quit on a human being. You try to make people better. That's number one. So we can do what Tom Brady says and ask for compassion for the player, but that's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. That doesn't mean you can just say, okay, yep, you're right. That's not cool. We shouldn't criticize, and there shouldn't be any repercussions. It's not a fun conversation for sports, but it's a real-life thing. Everybody listening to me has probably, whether they know it or not, somebody in their circle dealing with mental illness. Some kind. You know, there's varying degrees of mental illness. And if you know somebody that needs help, you certainly want to get them help. But I have a big family. And there have been many kinds of issues over the years. And everybody tries and everybody wants to get a person who's having trouble, wants to get them help. But their actions still had consequences, still ruined relationships, still wound up in legal issues. And this isn't any different. We don't have to go one side or the other. We can handle both of these things at the same time. You can both hope that Antonio Brown will get help and get right, but also criticize him for acting the way that he does and for doing the things that he's done now for a number of years. Both of those things are okay. And they do actually probably both need to exist at the same time right now. All right, going to change gears for the last segment, and I'll try, you know, I may expand on some of these topics later on the week when we have some more time. I do want to do a little update on baseball and just a quick thought on why pushing this labor issue to the limit is maybe even a worse idea than we thought originally. It's coming up on KMOX. All right, just a couple of quick thoughts on some baseball before we run out of time for the night. And, of course, we'll be back doing this again tomorrow night, so we'll have time for more. Obviously, nothing new to report when it comes to the collective bargaining talks in Major League Baseball. None is not unexpected. We just finished the holidays. You know, they're probably going to start ramping things up here at some point this month, probably later in the month than sooner, because, of course, you have to be children. And you have to wait until the very last second. You know, it's funny. Your whole life in school, your whole life, and in college too, but in, you know, all the way through grade school and junior high and high school and even college, teachers, professors, they're always telling you, don't put it off to the last minute. Keep working on this project. Keep studying for the exam. Don't do it all at the last minute. And then what do we all do the minute that we're adults? We put everything off until the last minute. Complicated, important collective bargaining talks. We can't have serious conversations unless we're close to a deadline. What is wrong with humans? Of course, I say that a lot. Mostly when I'm driving on the highway, I usually say that. But for whatever reason, we're like that. We need it to be dramatic, so we create drama. So there's nothing new to report there. I'm sure they're going to get their butts in seats and start getting things going at some point. But I will say that this is a terrible time for baseball to be a complete non-entity in the sports world. It is a terrible time for nobody to be talking or writing about anything, because they're not. I don't know if you guys have looked, but the big baseball writers, there's not much out there. You're getting fun stories. You're getting side stories. You're getting nothing really, though, on a daily basis that feeds your fire for the spring. It's a wasted opportunity for Major League Baseball. You know, they've had all this, all these losses, all the money lost from 2020 and all the COVID problems. You had attendance down last year, so you lost some revenue there too. And now all you're doing is further ticking off your fan base. And by the way, you're also losing the people on the fringes, which is the important part. See, you can make me angry. You know, I'm the diehard baseball fan. You can make me angry. I'm going to be there the first day of spring training, wearing my uniform. I have my glove at the stadium. I got my jersey on. I'm ready. I'm not going anywhere. The people that you're pushing off, the people that you're losing, are those casuals. See, that's where the NFL kicks everyone else's butt. They dominate with the casual sports fan, the person that probably doesn't follow it every day, but they like it when their team is good and they jump on the bandwagon, or, you know, they'll sit on Sunday when they got nothing to do and watch a couple of games, maybe put some money on those games to make it more interesting. Major League Baseball doesn't have as many of them, but when you go through all of this, you follow COVID with a mixed year last year with now a labor dispute. Do you have any idea how many people that are fringe people that are going to find something else to do and find something else to pay attention to? That's the problem, and that's what Major League Baseball and to a degree, the Players Association, it's what they don't get. They're thinking like, oh, we don't want to give that other side more money. Well, great, but you're both hurting yourselves by being in this situation to begin with, by putting it off, by falling into that stupid cliche, that deadlines drive conversation, deadlines drive deals. You're grown people. You can both agree that we're not going to wait for the deadline. Both sides think they're going to get over on the other. They're like, you know, by waiting, it's going to work for us. And then the other side's like, you know what? If we wait, it's going to work better for us. You're both playing the same stupid game. Sit down, get in a room, and don't leave until you have an agreement. Because I tell you, if you play that game, if you treat it like Survivor, if you treat it like a reality TV show, you guys can't leave until you have a deal. They'd have a deal in a week. I mean, we'll bring you food and everything, and you can go to the bathroom and stuff, but you can't go home. You can't do anything else. All you're allowed to do is negotiate. I guarantee you they get it done in 2 days, because none of them are going to want to sit there and do that. But nope, we're going to wait because humans are stupid. Now, there's another story today that I hope is not true in the way that it was reported, but if it is, it's a pretty bad look for Rob Manfred. Andrew Marchand of the New York Post had a story that said that Ken Rosenthal is out at MLB Network. He's still obviously going to be on the broadcast for Fox. He's still going to write for The Athletic, but he's out at MLB Network, according to Andrew Marchand, because of stories that were critical of Rob Manfred. And when you're talking about a guy like Ken Rosenthal, see, Ken Rosenthal's not the guy that's going to write an article, write a column or something where he sets someone on fire, like figuratively sets them on fire. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do the stuff that I just did. He doesn't get personal and call people stupid or anything like that. And what the things that he actually did write about Manfred during this is, by the way, apparently going back to 2020 when the sides were negotiating the return from COVID, and he wrote a couple stories about how he thought Manfred was mishandling some of the communication there. And I didn't even realize this at the time, but apparently he got sidelined for 3 months. They didn't let him work on anything on MLB Network for 3 months. And now they're not firing him, by the way. They're just not picking up his contract. His contract expired at the end of 2021. And if there's any truth at all to the idea that he was not renewed because Rob Manfred or someone else in Major League Baseball's head office didn't like what he was writing, then you're completely undermining your network. Because now the message I'm getting is, well, the people that are still there are the ones that are willing to play ball with the commissioner. And I know that's not entirely true. I mean, a lot of those guys on there are some of my favorite personalities. I really like the work that they do. I watch MLB Network a lot. But that's a horrible thing to be out there. That someone as respectful as Ken Rosenthal is being pushed out because the commissioner didn't like that he was criticized on MLB Network or by someone who works for MLB Network. Because keep in mind, the stories were in The Athletic. They were not on the air at MLB Network. Hopefully that's not true the way that it was reported, but something tells me. Hey, you guys have yourselves a great night. We got a full show again tomorrow night. Talk to you then.